Okay. Rivers and Ocean 04. Good. JJ Polo. Okay. Rivers and Ocean 04. I'm sorry. I stared at my computer. This conversation was giving me a headache. JJ Polo. Why are you sorry? Another couple of seconds. Rivers and Ocean 04. I don't actually know anymore. I almost laughed. I didn't understand what the hell had just happened. I didn't understand his apologies or his confusion, and I didn't even think I wanted to know. What I wanted was to go back to not caring about Ocean James, the boy with two first names. I'd spoken to this kid for a total of maybe an hour, and suddenly his presence was in my bedroom, in my personal space, stressing me out. I didn't like it. It made me feel weird. So I tried to keep things simple. JJ Polo. Why don't we just do the homework? Another 10 seconds. Rivers and Ocean 04. Okay. And we did. But I felt something change between us, and I had no idea what it was. 5. The next morning, my brother, who had a zero period and always left for school an hour before I did, stopped by my room to borrow the Wu-Tang CD I'd stolen from him. I'd been putting on mascara when he started knocking on my door, and he was now demanding I give him back not only his CD, but his iPod, too. And I was shouting back that his iPod was far more useful to me during the school day than it had ever been for him. And I was still making this argument when I opened the door and he suddenly froze. He looked me up and down, and his eyes widened, just a little. What? I said. Nothing. I led him inside. I gave him the CD he was looking for. He kept looking at me. What? I said again, irritated. Nothing, he said, and laughed. You look nice. I raised an eyebrow. This was a trick. New outfit? I looked down at what I was wearing. My sweater wasn't new, but I'd bought these jeans from the thrift store last week and had just finished altering them. They'd been a few sizes too big for me, but the quality of the denim was too good to pass up. Besides, they'd only cost me 50 cents. Sort of, I said. The jeans are new. He nodded. Well, they're nice. Yeah. Okay, I said. Why are you being weird? He shrugged. I'm not being weird, he said. The jeans are nice. They're just, really tight. I'm not used to seeing you in pants like that. Gross. Hey, listen, I don't care. They look good on you. Uh-huh. No, I mean it. They look nice. He was still smiling. Oh my God, what? Nothing, he said for the third time. I just, you know, I don't think Ma's going to like seeing your ass in those jeans. I rolled my eyes. Well, she doesn't have to look at my ass if she doesn't want to. Navid laughed. It's just, sometimes what you wear doesn't really match, you know? It's a little confusing. He gestured vaguely at my head, even though I hadn't put on my scarf yet. Still, I knew what he was trying to say. I knew he was trying not to be judgmental, but the conversation irritated me. People, and often guys, like to say that Muslim women wore headscarves because they were trying to be demure, or because they were trying to cover up their beauty. And I knew that there were ladies in the world who felt that way. I couldn't speak for all Muslim women. No one could. But it was a sentiment with which I fundamentally disagreed. I didn't believe it was possible to hide a woman's beauty. I thought women were gorgeous no matter what they wore, and I didn't think they owed anyone an explanation for their sartorial choices. Different women felt comfortable in different outfits. They were all beautiful. But it was only the monsters who forced women to wear human potato sacks all day that managed to make headline news, and these assholes had somehow set the tone for all of us. No one even asked me the question anymore. People just assumed they knew the answer, and they were nearly always wrong. I dressed the way I did not because I was trying to be a nun, but because it felt good, and because it made me feel less vulnerable in general, like I wore a kind of armor every day. It was a personal preference. I definitely didn't do it because I was trying to be modest for the sake of some douchebag who couldn't keep his dick in his pants. People struggled to believe this, because people struggled to believe women in general. It was one of the greatest frustrations of my life. So I shoved Naveed out of my room and told him it was none of his business what my ass looked like in my jeans. And he said, "No, I know. That's not what I meant." "Don't make it weird," I said, and closed the door in his face. After he left, I looked in the mirror. The jeans were nice. The days continued to dissolve, and quietly. Aside from breakdancing, pretty much nothing had changed, except that Ocean was suddenly different around me in bio. He'd been different ever since that first and only AIM conversation we'd had over 2 weeks ago. He talked too much. He was always saying things like, "Wow, the weather is so weird today," and "How was your weekend?" and "Hey, did you study for the quiz on Friday?" And it surprised me every single time. I'd glance at him for only a second and say, "Yeah, the weather is weird," and "My weekend was fine," and "No, I didn't study for the quiz on Friday." And he'd smile and say, "I know, right? And that's nice." And "Really? I've been studying all week." And I'd usually ignore him. I never asked him a follow-up question. Maybe I was being rude, but I didn't care. Ocean was a really good-looking guy, and I know this doesn't sound like a valid reason to dislike someone, but it was reason enough for me. He made me nervous. I didn't want to talk to him. I didn't want to get to know him. I didn't want to like him, which was harder than you'd think, because he was very likable. Falling for someone like Ocean, I knew, would only end badly for me. I didn't want to embarrass myself. Today, he'd been trying really hard to make small talk, which I guessed was understandable, as it was otherwise awkward to sit around for an hour saying nothing while you picked apart a dead cat. And he said, "So, are you going to homecoming?" I'd actually looked up then. I looked up because I was amazed. I laughed softly and turned away. His question was so ridiculous I didn't even answer him. We'd been having pep rallies all week in anticipation of the homecoming game. It was a football thing, I think, and I'd been skipping them. We were also, apparently, having class spirit competitions, whatever that meant. I was supposed to be wearing green or blue or something today, but I wasn't. People were losing their minds over this shit. "You don't really do school stuff, huh?" Ocean said, and I wondered why he cared. "No," I said quietly. "I don't really do school stuff." "Oh." There was a part of me that wanted to be friendlier to Ocean, but sometimes it made me really, actually, physically uncomfortable when he was nice to me. It felt so fake. Some days our interactions felt like he was trying really hard to overcompensate for that first error, for thinking my parents were about to ship me off to a harem or something. Like he wanted another chance to prove he wasn't close-minded. Like he thought I might not notice that he went from thinking I couldn't even meet up after school to thinking I might show up at a homecoming dance, all in the span of 2 weeks. I didn't like it. I just didn't trust it. So I cut the heart out of a dead cat and called it a day. I showed up to practice a little too early that afternoon, and the room was still locked. Naveed was the one who had the key that would let us in, and he hadn't arrived yet, so I slumped down on the ground and waited. I knew that basketball season was starting sometime next month. I knew this because I saw the posters plastered everywhere. But the gym was, for some reason, already busier than I'd ever seen it. It was loud, super loud, lots of shouting, lots of whistles blowing and sneakers squeaking. I didn't really know what was happening. I didn't know much about sports in general. All I heard were the thunderous sounds of many feet running across a court. I could hear it through the walls. When I finally got into the dance room with the other guys, we turned up the music and did our best to drown out the reverberations of the many basketballs hitting the floor. I was working with Jacoby today, who was showing me how to improve my footwork. I already knew how to do a basic six-step, which was exactly what it sounded like. It was a series of six steps performed on the ground. You held yourself up on your arms while your legs did most of the work, moving you in a sort of circular motion. This served as an introduction to your power move, which was your acrobatic move, the kind of thing that looked sometimes like what you saw gymnasts do on a pommel horse, except way cooler. Breakdancing was, in many ways, closer to something like capoeira, an Afro-Brazilian form of martial arts that involves a lot of kicks and spins in midair. Capoeira made kicking someone's ass look both scary and beautiful. Breakdancing was kind of like that. Jacoby was showing me how to add CCs to my six-step. They were called CCs because they were invented by a group of breakers who called themselves the Crazy Commandos, and not because the move looked anything like a C. They were body rotations that made my leg work more complex, and just overall made the routine look cooler. I'd been working at it for a while. I'd already learned how to do a double-handed CC, but I was still getting the hang of doing a one-handed CC, and Jacoby was watching me as I tried, over and over again, to get the thing right. When I finally did, he clapped, hard. He was beaming. "Nice job," he said. I just about fell backward. I was on the ground, splayed like a starfish, but I was smiling. This was nothing. These were baby steps, but it felt so good. Jacoby helped me to my feet and squeezed my shoulder. "Nice," he said. "Seriously." I smiled at him. I turned around to find my water bottle and suddenly froze. Ocean was leaning against the doorframe, not quite in the room and not quite outside of it, a gym bag slung across his chest. He waved at me. I looked around, confused, like maybe he'd been waving at someone else, but he laughed at me. Finally, I just met him at the door, and I realized then that someone had propped it open. It happened sometimes when it got really hot in here. One of the guys would wedge the door open to let the room breathe a little. Still, our open door had never attracted visitors before. Hi, I said. What are you doing here? Ocean shook his head. He seemed somehow even more surprised than I was. I was just walking by, he said. I heard the music. I wanted to know what was happening. I raised an eyebrow. You were just walking by. Yeah, he smiled. I spend a lot of time in the gym. Anyway, I honestly didn't know you'd be in here. Your music is just super loud. Okay. But I figured I should say hi instead of standing here watching you like a creep. Good call, I said, but I was frowning, still processing. So you don't, like, need something? For class? He shook his head. I stared at him. Finally, he took a deep breath. You really weren't kidding, he said. About the breakdancing thing. I laughed, looked at him incredulously. You thought I would lie about something like that? No, he said, but he seemed suddenly uncertain. I don't know. I didn't know. Uh-huh. Are these your friends? Ocean said. He was staring at Jacoby, who was shooting me a look that said, who's the guy, and what's going on, all at the same time. Sort of, I said. That's cool. Yeah. I was so confused. I should go. Ocean nodded, stood up straighter. Yeah, me too. We said awkward goodbyes. As soon as he was out of sight, I closed the door. Jacoby was the only one who noticed me talking to Ocean that day, and when he asked me about it, I said it was nothing, just a kid from class who needed something. I wasn't even sure why I lied about it. I was totally perplexed. 6. Things in my life began to find a rhythm. I was settling into a new routine in this town, and my anxieties about being friendless at school were beginning to fade. I was no longer a shock to the system. Instead, I'd become a regular fixture at school, one that most of my classmates could now comfortably ignore. People still enjoyed referring to me as the Taliban as I walked by, and every once in a while I'd find an anonymous note in my locker telling me to fuck off back to where I came from. And occasionally, someone would take the time to point out that towel heads like me didn't deserve to live in their country. But I tried not to let it bother me. I tried to get used to it. I'd heard somewhere that people could get used to anything. Luckily, breakdancing kept me busy in the best possible way. I loved everything about it. The music, the moves, even the history. Breakdancing started back in the 1970s in the South Bronx, New York, and slowly over time made its way across the country to Los Angeles. It was an iteration, a simultaneous arm and evolution of hip-hop, and coolest of all, it was originally used as an alternative to physical violence. In their fights over territories, gangs would have breakdancing battles to determine ownership, and that's why the term battle still exists today. Breaking crews don't compete, they battle. Each crew member delivers a performance. Best B-boy or B-girl wins. I threw myself into the work, hitting the gym nearly every day. When we didn't have access to the school's dance studio, we'd break down oversized cardboard boxes in abandoned streets and parking lots, set up a boombox, and practice. Navid would drag me out of bed way too early on weekend mornings to do 10-mile runs with him. We started training together, regularly. Breakdancing involved extremely taxing physical work, but it was work that filled me with joy and purpose. In fact, I was so focused on this new life outside of school, and so tired after practice every day, that I hardly had time to be angry about all the assholes littered everywhere. The educational aspect of school was pretty boring. I'd figured out a long time ago how to get A's without trying. My secret to success was that I genuinely didn't care. I felt no pressure to perform, so I usually did fine. I'd stopped caring about school a few years ago, right around the time I was old enough to realize that caring about a school, its teachers, its students, its walls and doors and many hallways, nearly always ended in heartbreak. So I just stopped. I stopped remembering things, people, faces. In time, the institutions and their many names all blurred together. Mrs. Someone was my first grade teacher. Mr. What's-His-Name taught third grade. Who knew? I was required by law and the wooden spoon my mom liked to whoop my ass with to show up every day, so I did. I showed up. I did the work. I dealt with the dependable, unrelenting microaggressions from the masses that influenced the emotional weather patterns of my day. I didn't stress about getting into a good college, because I already knew I couldn't afford to go to a good college. I didn't stress about AP classes, because I didn't think of them as any different from regular classes. I didn't stress about the SATs, because who gave a shit about the SATs? Not me. I don't know. I guess I always thought I'd turn out okay, no matter how badly my many schools tried to mutilate me. And I held on to that feeling every day. 2.5 more years, I thought. Just 2.5 more years, until I could get the hell away from this existence organized by school bells that, let's be honest, didn't even ring. They beeped. This was what I was thinking as I peeled another layer of soggy cat flesh away from soggy cat muscle. I was thinking about how much I hated this. How I was already anxious to get into the gym again. I was getting better at holding the crab pose now. I'd almost managed to hold my body weight up on my elbows yesterday, and I wanted to see if I'd make more progress this afternoon. I was headed to my first live breakdancing battle this weekend, and I wanted to feel like I knew something when I got there. I finished my shift with the cat and peeled off my gloves, tossing them into the trash before washing my hands, for good measure, in our lab station sink. So far, our discoveries had been underwhelming, which was how I liked them. One of the groups in our class discovered that the cat they'd been dissecting had died pregnant. It found a litter of unborn kittens in her uterus. This was a seriously messed up school assignment. "Your turn," I said, glancing at Ocean, whose attitude toward me had changed rather dramatically in the last week. He'd stopped talking to me in class. He no longer asked me generic questions about my evenings or my weekends. In fact, he'd said no more than a couple of words to me in the last few days, not since that afternoon I saw him in the dance studio. I often caught him looking at me, but then people were always looking at me. Ocean at least had the decency to pretend he wasn't looking at me, and he never said anything about it, for which I was secretly grateful. I much preferred silent stares to the loud assholes who told me, unprompted, exactly what they thought of me. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little confused. I thought I'd had Ocean pretty figured out, but suddenly I wasn't so sure. Aside from the unusual name, he seemed to me like an extremely ordinary boy raised by extremely ordinary parents. The kind of parents who bought canned soup, lied to their kids about Santa Claus, believed everything they read in their history books, and didn't really talk about their feelings. My parents were the exact opposite. I was fascinated by canned food simply because that miracle of Western invention was never allowed in my house. My parents made everything from scratch, no matter how basic. We never celebrated Christmas, except that sometimes my mom and dad took pity on us. I received a box of envelopes one year. And my parents had taught us about the atrocities of war and colonialism since before I could read. They also had no problem sharing their feelings with me. They relished it. My parents loved telling me what they felt was wrong with me. It was what they called my unfortunate attitude all the time. Anyway, I couldn't really get a bead on Ocean anymore, and it bothered me that it even bothered me. His silence was what I thought I wanted. It was, in fact, exactly what I'd been working toward. But now that he really had ignored me, I couldn't help but wonder why. Even so, I thought his silence was for the best. Today, though, was a little different. Today, after a 20-minute stretch of perfect quiet, he spoke. "Hey," he said, "what happened to your hand?" I'd been trying to tear open a seam in a leather jacket last night, and I'd tugged a little too hard. The seam ripper slipped and sliced open the back of my left hand. I had a pretty intense bandage taped over the space between my finger and thumb. I met Ocean's eyes. "Sewing accident," I said. His eyebrows pulled together.
"Sewing accident? What's a sewing accident?"
"Sewing," I said. "Like sewing clothes? I make a lot of my own clothes," I said, when he didn't seem to understand. "Or, I mean, often I'll just buy vintage and do the alterations myself." I lifted my hand as proof. "Either way, I'm not great at it."
"You make your own clothes?"
His eyes had widened, just a little. "Sometimes," I said.
"Why?"
I laughed. It was a reasonable question.
"Well, because the clothes I really want are out of my price range."
Ocean only stared at me.
"Do you know anything about fashion?"
I asked him. He shook his head.
"Oh,"
I said, and tried to smile. "Yeah, I guess it's not for everyone." But I loved it. Alexander McQueen's fall line had just hit stores, and after a lot of begging, I convinced my mom to drive me to one of the fancy malls around here just so I could see the pieces in person. I didn't even touch them. I just stood near them, staring. I thought Alexander McQueen was a genius.
"So, did you do that to your shoes?" Ocean said suddenly.
"Like on purpose?" I glanced down. I was wearing what used to be a pair of simple white Nikes, but I'd drawn all over them. And my backpack. And my binders. It was just something I did sometimes. I'd lock myself in my room, listen to music, and draw on things. Sometimes it was random doodles, but lately I'd been experimenting with graffiti. Tagging specifically, because some tagging techniques reminded me of highly stylized Persian calligraphy. I wasn't like Navid, though. I'd never graffitied public property. Not more than twice, anyway.
"Yeah," I said slowly.
"I did that on purpose."
"Oh, that's cool."
I laughed at the look on his face.
"No, really," he said. "I like it."
Still, I hesitated. "Thanks."
"You have another pair like that too, huh?"
"Yes." I raised an eyebrow.
"How'd you know?"
"You sit in front of me," he said. He looked me right in the eye and he almost smiled, but it looked like a question.
"You've been sitting in front of me for 2 months. I stare at you every day."
My eyes widened, and then I frowned. I didn't even have a chance to say the words before he said,
"I didn't mean..."
He shook his head, looked away.
"Wow, I didn't mean that, like, I stare at you. I just meant that I see you, you know?"
"Shit," he said softly, and mostly to himself.
"Never mind."
I half laughed, but it sounded weird.
"Okay."
And that was it. He didn't say anything else worth remembering for the rest of the period. 7. I was dropping off my books in my locker after school and grabbing the workout clothes I'd stashed in there with my gym bag when I heard a sudden swell of voices. The halls were usually pretty quiet at this hour, and I rarely saw people after school let out, so the sounds were unusual. I turned around before I could think it through. Cheerleaders. There were three of them, very pretty and peppy. They weren't in official cheerleading uniforms. They were wearing matching tracksuits, but somehow it was obvious that they were cheerleaders. Interestingly, cheerleaders had never been mean to me. Instead, they ignored me so completely that I found their presence unexpectedly comforting. I turned back around. I just slung my gym bag over my shoulder when I heard someone call out a greeting, and I was very certain that whoever was talking was not talking to me, and that even if they were talking to me,
that I'd turn around only to be met with some new creative bullshit, so I ignored it. I slammed my locker closed, spun the combination, and walked away. Hey! I kept walking, but now I was beginning to feel a little creeped out because the voice did seem to be focused in my direction, and I didn't think I wanted to know why someone was trying to flag me down right now. All the people I knew at this school were waiting for me at this exact moment, inside of a dance room in the gym, so whoever this was, they were almost certainly trying to bother me, and... Shireen! I froze. This was an unusual development. Generally, the assholes who harassed me in the hallways didn't know my name. I turned around, but only halfway. Hey! It was Ocean, looking a little exasperated. I had to make a physical effort to keep from looking too surprised. You dropped your phone, he said, and held it out for me to take. I looked at my phone in his hand, looked at him. I didn't understand why the world kept throwing him in my path, but I also didn't know how to be mad at him for being a decent person, so I took the phone. Thanks, I said. He looked at me and his expression was somehow both frustrated and amused, and still he said nothing, which would have been fine, except that he looked at me for just 3 seconds too long, and suddenly it was weird. I took a deep breath. I was about to say goodbye when someone called his name. I looked past him to see that it was one of the cheerleaders. I was surprised but tried not to show it, and then I left without a word. That night, after a particularly exhausting training session, I felt too wired to sleep, and I couldn't explain why. I was sitting in bed, writing, writing, writing. I'd always kept a pretty intense diary. I scribbled in that thing every day, multiple times a day, in the middle of class even, during lunch hours. The thing was so precious to me that I carried it around everywhere I went, because it was the only thing I could think to do, the only way to keep it safe. I worried that one day my mom might get her hands on it, read it, realize her daughter was a complicated, flawed human being, one who often disregarded the dogma of religion, and have an actual aneurysm. So I always kept it close. But tonight, I couldn't focus my mind. Every once in a while I'd look up, look at my computer, its dead, dark face gleaming in the dim light, and I'd hesitate. It was really late, maybe 1 in the morning. Everyone was asleep. I put my pen down. The old, hulking computer in my room was a bulky, unwieldy thing. My mother had built it, piece by piece, a couple of years ago, when she was getting some new level of certification in computer programming. It was a bit like Frankenstein's monster, except that it was my mother's monster, and I'd been the lucky recipient of its great girth. Quickly, before I could change my mind, I turned the thing on. It was loud. The screen lit up, blinding and ostentatious, and its CPU component started whirring like crazy. The fan was working too hard, the hard drive was click-clicking away, and I immediately regretted my decision. I'd heard stories of parents who let their kids stay up all night, but I didn't know them. Instead, my parents were always on my case, and always suspicious, though generally for good reason. My brother and I weren't very good at following rules, and I was sure that they would hear me tooling around in here, barge inside, and force me to go to sleep. I bit my lip and waited. The damn computer had finally turned on. It took like 10 minutes. It took another 10 to click around and get the internet to work, because sometimes my computer was just, I don't know, obstinate. I was weirdly nervous. I didn't even know what I was doing, why I was doing it. Not exactly. My AIM account logged in automatically, and my short list of buddies were all offline. Except one. My heart did something weird, and I stood up too fast, feeling suddenly stupid and embarrassed. I didn't even know this guy. He was not, would never be, even remotely interested in someone like me, and I knew this. I already knew this, and I was still standing here, being an idiot. I wasn't going to do it. I wasn't going to make an ass out of myself. I turned back to my computer, ready to hit the power switch and shut the whole thing down, when, double ding, double ding, double ding. Rivers and Ocean 04. Hey, Rivers and Ocean 04, you're online. Rivers and Ocean 04. You're never online. I stared, finger frozen over the power switch.
Double ding. Rivers and Ocean 04.
Hello?
I sat down at my desk.
Juje Polo. Hey.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
Hey.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
What are you doing up so late?
I started typing.
I don't know. Before I realized my answer might be way too obvious, so I tried for something generic.
Juje Polo. I couldn't sleep.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
Oh.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
Hey. Can I ask you a question?
I stared at the messaging window.
Felt a little scared.
Juje Polo.
Sure.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
What does Juje Polo mean?
I was so relieved he hadn't asked me something super offensive, I almost laughed out loud.
Juje Polo.
It's like a Persian thing. Juje means small, but it's also the word for a baby chicken.
Juje Polo.
And polo means rice.
Juje Polo.
I realize as I'm typing this that that doesn't make any sense, but it's just like an inside joke, I guess. My family calls me Juje because I'm small, and Juje kebab and rice is like a kind of food.
Juje Polo.
Anyway,
Juje Polo.
It's just a nickname.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
No, I get it. That's nice.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
So you're Persian?
Juje Polo.
Yeah.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
That's so cool. I really like Persian food.
My eyebrows shot up my forehead, surprised.
Juje Polo.
You do?
Rivers and Ocean 04.
Yeah. I really like hummus.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
And falafel.
Ah, yeah, okay.
Juje Polo.
Neither one of those things is Persian.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
They're not?
Juje Polo.
No.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
Oh.
I dropped my head in my hands. I suddenly hated myself. What the hell was I doing? This conversation was so stupid. I was so stupid. I couldn't believe I turned on my computer for this.
Juje Polo.
Anyway, I should probably go to bed.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
Oh, okay. I'd already typed the word bye, was just about to hit enter.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
Hey, before you go.
I hesitated, deleted, rewrote.
Juje Polo.
Yeah?
Rivers and Ocean 04.
Maybe someday you can show me what Persian food is.
I stared at my screen for too long. I was confused. My first instinct told me he was asking me out. My second, wiser instinct told me that he would never, ever be stupid enough to do something like that. That he was almost certainly aware of the fact that nice white boys did not presume to ask weird Muslim girls out on dates. But then, barring that, I was mystified. Did he want me to, like, educate him on Persian food? Teach him about the ways of my people? What the hell? So I decided to be honest.
Juje Polo.
I don't think I understand what you mean.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
I want to try Persian food.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
Are there any Persian restaurants around here?
Juje Polo.
LOL.
Juje Polo.
Around here?
No.
Juje Polo.
Not unless you count my mom's kitchen.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
Oh.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
Then maybe I can come over for dinner.
I nearly fell out of my chair.
The balls on this kid. Holy shit.
Juje Polo.
You want to come into my house and have dinner with my family?
Rivers and Ocean 04.
Is that weird?
Juje Polo.
A little.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
Oh.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
So is that a no?
Juje Polo.
I don't know.
I frowned at my computer.
Juje Polo.
I guess I can ask my parents.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
Cool.
Rivers and Ocean 04.
Okay, good night.
Juje Polo.
Juje Polo.
Good night.
I had no idea what the actual hell had just happened. 8.
I spent the weekend ignoring my computer. It was the middle of October. I'd been in school for a couple of months, and I was still trying to wrap my head around it. I hadn't made any of my own friends, but I wasn't feeling lonely, which was new. Plus, I was busy, also new, and bonus, I suddenly had plans. In fact, I was getting ready to head out. Tonight, I had a breakdancing battle to attend. We were just going to be in the audience, but the prospect still excited me. We wanted to join the breaking scene in this new city and see where it would take us. Maybe, once we were good enough, we'd start battling other crews. Maybe one day, we dreamed, we'd enter regional and state, and maybe, maybe, international competitions. We had big dreams, and they had been parent-approved. My parents were a little conservative, a little traditional, and in some ways, surprisingly progressive. Generally, they were pretty cool. Still, they had massive double standards. They were terrified that the world would hurt me, as a young girl, far more than it would my brother. And so they were stricter with me, with my curfews, with what I could and could not do. They never tried to cut me off socially, but they always wanted to know everything about where I was going, and who I was going with, and exactly when I would be back, and on and on and on. And they almost never did this with Navid. When Navid came home late, they'd only be mildly irritated. Once I came home an hour late after watching the first Harry Potter movie. I had no idea the thing would be 3 hours long, and my mom was so upset she couldn't decide whether to cry or kill me. This reaction baffled me, because my social activities were so mild as to be almost non-existent. I wasn't out late partying, ever. I wasn't sitting around getting drunk somewhere. I'd do stupid shit with my friends, like wander around Target and buy the cheapest stuff we could find and use it to decorate the cars in the parking lot. My mom did not approve of this. The upside of breakdancing with my brother was that my parents worried less when they knew he was with me, ready to punch an unsuspecting harasser in the face if necessary. But my brother and I had also learned a long time ago how to game the system. When I wanted to go out somewhere, and I knew my parents wouldn't approve, he'd vouch for me. I'd do the same for him. But Navid had just turned 18. He was older, and as a result, freer. He'd been working odd jobs everywhere we'd lived since he was younger than even me. And he'd saved up long enough to buy himself an iPod and a car. It was the teenage dream. He was currently the proud owner of a 1988 Nissan Sentra he would one day use to run over my foot. Until then, my ass was still walking to school every day. Sometimes I'd catch a ride with him, but he had that zero period in the mornings, and he usually ditched me after practice to do something with his friends. Today, we'd be driving that beautiful beast into a new world. A world that would give me a new title and hone a new facet of my identity. I wanted to become a B-girl in the full sense of the word. It would be so much better to be called a B-girl, a breakdancer, than the girl who wore that thing on her head. The event was even more exciting than I hoped it'd be. I'd seen battles before, of course. We'd been watching old breakdancing competitions on VHS for years. But it was something else entirely to witness these things in person. The space was relatively small. It looked like a converted art gallery, and people were assembled like cigarettes in a pack, pressed up against the walls and doors, squeezing together to leave enough empty space in the center of the room. The energy was palpable. Music was reverberating against the walls and ceilings, the bass pulsing in my eardrums. In here, people didn't seem to care at all about me. No one looked at me. Eyes merely glanced off my face and body as they scanned the room. I didn't know why it suddenly didn't matter what I looked like, why my appearance garnered no reactions. Maybe it was because the self-selecting demographic in here was different. I was surrounded by diverse bodies and faces. I was hearing Spanish in one ear and Chinese in the other. We were white and black and brown, brought together by a single interest. I loved it. Somehow I knew in that moment that all that mattered in this particular world was talent. If I were a decent breakdancer, these people would respect me. Here, I could be more than the settings applied to my life by society. It was all I'd ever wanted. I came home that night feeling more exhilarated than I'd felt, maybe ever.
I talked my mom's ear off about the whole thing, and she smiled, unimpressed, and told me to go do my homework. School would be waiting for me bright and early the following day, but tonight I was still aglow. Echoes of the music were dancing around in my head. I got ready for bed and couldn't focus on the schoolwork I'd left unfinished. Instead, I cleared a space in the center of my room and practiced the crab pose for so long the carpet began to burn my palms. I kept falling forward, kissing the floor, as my brother liked to say, and couldn't get it quite right. I still had a long way to go before I'd become even a decent breakdancer, but then I'd never been afraid of hard work. 9. My second class of the day was called Global Perspectives. My teacher was one of those wild creative thinkers, one of those guys determined to make breakthroughs with teenagers. He was cooler than most teachers, but it was obvious most days that he was trying a little too hard to convince us of this fact. Still, I didn't hate his class. The only thing he ever required of us was class participation. There were no exams, no homework assignments. Instead, he forced us to discuss current events, politics, controversial topics. He wanted us to ask each other hard questions, to question ourselves and our ideas about the world, and he wanted us to engage directly with each other in ways we otherwise never would. Those of us who refused to participate, refused to voice aloud our opinions, would fail. I was into it. Thus far, the class had been pretty drama-free. He'd started out with softballs. We'd walked in on the second day of class to discover he'd divided all the desks into groups of four. We were supposed to start there, in a smaller group, before he'd change things up. After 30 minutes of intense discussions, he came by our little cluster and asked us to recap what we talked about. And then he'd said,
"Great, great. So what are the names of everyone in your group?"
That was the thing that got me to take him seriously. Because, wow, we'd been talking for a while and we'd never once asked to know each other's names. I thought maybe this guy was smart. I thought maybe he would be different. I thought, hey, Mr. Jordan might actually know something. But today was a new Monday, time for a change. I'd barely gotten to my seat when he shouted at me.
"Shireen and Travis," he called. "Come over here, please."
I looked at him, confused, but he only waved me over. I dropped my backpack on the floor next to my chair and went, reluctantly, to the front of the class. I stared at my feet, at the wall. I was feeling nervous. I hadn't met Travis yet. He wasn't one of the four people in my group. But Travis was everything television taught you a jock was supposed to look like. He was big, blonde, and burly, and he was wearing a Letterman jacket. He, too, I noticed, was looking around awkwardly. Mr. Jordan was smiling.
"A new experiment," he said to the class, clapping his hands together before he turned back to us. "All right, you two," he said, turning our shoulders so that Travis and I were facing each other. "No squirming. I want you to look at each other's faces."
Someone kill me. I looked at Travis only because I didn't want to fail this class. Travis didn't seem thrilled about staring at my face either, and I felt bad for him. Neither one of us wanted to be doing whatever the hell my teacher was about to make us do.
"Keep looking," Mr. Jordan said.
"I want you two to see each other. Really, really see each other. Are you looking?"
I shot a hard glare at Mr. Jordan. I said nothing.
"Okay," he said. He was smiling like a maniac. "Now, Travis," he said, "I want you to tell me exactly what you think when you look at Shireen."
And I lost feeling in my legs. I felt suddenly faint and somehow still rooted to the ground. I felt panic and outrage. I felt betrayed, and I had no idea what to do. How could I justify turning to my teacher and telling him he was insane? How could I do that without getting into trouble? Travis had gone bright red. He started sputtering.
"Be honest," Mr. Jordan was saying. "Remember, honesty is everything. Without it, we can never move forward. We can never have productive discussions. So be honest. Tell me exactly what you think when you look at her face. First impressions. Off the cuff. Now. Now."
I'd gone numb. I was paralyzed by an impotence and embarrassment I didn't know how to explain.
I stood there hating myself while Travis fumbled for the words.
I don't know, he said.
He could barely look at me.
Bullshit, Mr. Jordan said, his eyes flashing. That's bullshit, Travis, and you know it. Now be honest.
I was breathing too fast. I was staring at Travis, begging him with my eyes to just walk away, to leave me alone. But Travis was lost in his own panic. He couldn't see mine.
I don't know, he said again. When I look at her, I don't see anything. What?
Mr. Jordan again. He'd walked up to Travis, was studying him hard.
What do you mean you don't see anything?
I mean... Travis sighed. His face had gone blotchy with redness.
I mean, she doesn't like... I just don't see her. It's like she doesn't exist for me. When I look at her, I see nothing.
Anger fled my body. I felt suddenly limp, hollow. Tears pricked my eyes. I fought them back. I heard Mr. Jordan's vague, distorted sounds of victory. I heard him clap his hands together, excited. I saw him move in my direction, ostensibly to make me take a turn performing his stupid experiment, and instead I just stared at him, my face numb. And I walked away. I grabbed my backpack from where I'd left it and moved, in what felt like slow motion, straight out the door. I felt blind and deaf at the same time, like I was moving through fog. And I realized then, as I realized every time something like this happened, that I was never as strong as I hoped to be. I still cared too much. I was still so easily, pathetically punctured. I didn't know where I was going. I just knew I had to go, had to leave, had to get out of there before I cried in front of the class, cussed out Mr. Jordan, and got myself expelled. I charged blindly out the door and down the hall and halfway across the school before I realized I wanted to go home. I wanted to clear my head. I wanted to get away from everything for a little while. So I cut across the quad and through the parking lot and was just about to step off campus when I felt someone grab my arm.
Holy shit, you walk fast!
I spun around, stunned. Ocean's hand was on my arm, his eyes full of something like fear or concern, and he said, I've been calling your name this whole time. Didn't you hear me? I looked around like I was losing my mind. How did this keep happening to me? What the hell was Ocean doing here? I'm sorry, I said. I faltered. I realized he was still touching me, and I took a sudden, nervous step backward. I was kind of lost in my head.
Yeah, I figured, he said, and sighed. Mr. Jordan is a dick. What a complete asshole.
My eyes went wide. I was now somehow even more confused. How did you know about Mr. Jordan? Ocean stared at me. He looked like he wasn't sure whether or not I was joking.
I'm in your class, he said finally.
I blinked.
Are you serious? He said. You didn't know I was in your class?
He laughed, but it sounded sad. He shook his head.
Wow.
I still couldn't process this. It was too much. Too much was happening all at once.
Did you just transfer in or something? I asked. Or have you always been in my class?
Ocean looked stunned. Oh, wow. I'm really sorry, I said. I wasn't like ignoring you. I don't really look at people most of the time.
Yeah, he said and laughed again.
I know. I raised my eyebrows. And he sighed.
Hey, really, though, are you okay? I can't believe he did that to you.
Yeah. I looked away. I feel kind of bad for Travis. Ocean made a sound of disbelief.
Travis will be fine.
Yeah.
So you're okay? You don't need me to go back in there and kick his ass?
And I looked up, unable to contain my surprise. When had Ocean become the kind of guy willing to defend my honor? When had I leveled up to become the kind of person for whom he'd even offer? I barely talked to the guy, and even then, we'd never discussed much. Last week, he'd hardly spoken to me in bio. I realized then that I didn't know Ocean at all.
I'm okay, I said.
I mean, I wasn't, but I didn't know what else to say. I just really wanted to leave. And it only occurred to me that I'd said that last part out loud when he said,
Good idea. Let's get out of here. What? I accidentally laughed at him. Are you serious?
You were about to cut class, he said, weren't you?
I nodded.
Well, he said, and shrugged. I'll come with you.
You don't need to do that.
I know I don't need to do that, he said.
I just want to. Is that okay?
I stared at him. I stared at him and his simple, uncomplicated brown hair, his soft blue sweater and dark jeans. He was wearing very white sneakers. He was also squinting at me in the cold sunlight, waiting for my response. And he finally tugged a pair of sunglasses out of his pocket and put them on. They were nice sunglasses. They looked good on him.
Yeah, I said quietly. That's okay.
10. We walked to IHOP. It wasn't far from campus, and it seemed like an innocuous enough destination for cheap food and a little change of scenery. But then we were sitting in a booth, sitting across from each other, and I suddenly had no idea what I was doing, what we were doing. I was trying to think of what to say, how to say it, when Ocean seemed to suddenly remember he was still wearing sunglasses. He said, "Oh, right," and took them off. It was such a simple thing. It was a quiet, completely unmomentous moment. The world didn't stop turning. Birds didn't suddenly start singing. Obviously, I'd seen his eyes before, but somehow, suddenly, it was like I was seeing them for the first time. And somehow, suddenly, I couldn't stop staring at his face. Something fluttered against my heart. I felt my armor begin to break. He had really beautiful eyes. They were an unusual mix of blue and brown, and together they made a kind of gray. I'd never caught the subtleties before. Maybe because he'd never looked at me like this before, straight on, smiling, really smiling at me. I only then realized that I'd never gotten a full smile from Ocean before. Most of the time his smiles were confused or scared, or a combination of any number of other things. But for some reason, right now, in this extremely ugly booth at IHOP, he was smiling at me like there was something to celebrate. What? He finally said. I blinked fast, startled, embarrassed. I looked down at my menu and said, "Nothing," very quietly.
Why were you staring at me?
I wasn't staring at you. I held the menu closer to my face. No one said anything for a few seconds.
You never came back online over the weekend, he said.
Yeah.
Why not?
He reached forward and gently pushed the menu away from my face. Oh my God. I couldn't unsee it. I couldn't unsee it. Oh my God. Someone save me from myself. I couldn't unsee his face. What had happened to me? Why was I suddenly so attracted to him? Why? I reached around blindly in my mind for walls, old armor, anything to keep me safe from this, from the danger of all the stupid things that happened to my head around cute boys. But nothing was working, because he wouldn't stop looking at me. I was busy, I said, but the words came out a little weird. Oh, he said, and sat back. His face was inscrutable. He picked up his menu, his eyes scanning its many options. And then, I don't know, I couldn't take it anymore. Why are you hanging out with me? I said. The words just kind of happened. They just came out, breathless and a little angry. I didn't understand him. Didn't like what was happening to my heart around him. Didn't like that I had no idea what he was thinking. I was confused as hell, and it made me feel so off kilter, off my game, and I just needed to break this thing open and be done with it. I couldn't help it. Ocean sat up, put down his menu. He looked surprised. What do you mean?
I mean, I looked at the ceiling, bit my lip. I mean, I don't understand what's happening here. Why are you being so nice to me? Why are you following me out of class? Why are you asking to have dinner at my house? Oh, hey, yeah. Did you ask your parents about that? I don't understand what you're doing, I said, cutting him off. I could feel my face getting hot. What do you want from me? His eyes widened. I don't want anything from you. I swallowed hard, looked away. This isn't normal, Ocean.
What isn't normal?
This, I said, gesturing between us. This. This isn't normal. Guys like you don't talk to girls like me.
Girls like you?
Yes, I said. Girls like me. I narrowed my eyes at him. Please don't pretend you don't know what I'm talking about, okay? I'm not an idiot.
He stared at me.
I just want to know what's going on, I said. I don't understand why you're trying so hard to be my friend. I don't understand why you keep showing up in my life. Do you, like, feel sorry for me or something?
Oh, he raised his eyebrows. Wow.
Because if you're just being nice to me because you feel sorry for me, please don't. He smiled a little, and only to himself.
You don't understand, he said. It wasn't a question.
No, I don't understand. I'm trying to understand, and I don't understand, and it's freaking me out.
He laughed, just once.
Why is it freaking you out?
It just is.
Okay. You know what? I shook my head. Never mind. I think I should go.
Don't.
He sighed, hard, cutting himself off.
Don't go.
He mussed his hair, muttered, Jesus Christ, under his breath, and finally said, I just think you seem cool, okay? He looked at me.
Is that so hard to believe?
Kind of.
I also think you're really goddamn beautiful, but you just won't give me a chance to be cool about this, will you?
I thought for certain that my heart had stopped. I knew rationally that such a thing was impossible, but for some reason, it felt true. The only time anyone had ever called me anything close to beautiful was when I was in eighth grade. I'd overheard someone say it. She was explaining to another kid that she didn't like me because she thought I was one of those girls who was really pretty and really mean. She'd said it in an unkind, flippant way that made me think she really meant it. At the time, it had been the nicest thing anyone had ever said about me. I'd often wondered, since that day, if I really was pretty, but no one but my mother had ever bothered to corroborate her statement. And now, here, I was stunned.
Oh, was all I managed to say. My face felt like it had been set on fire.
Yeah, he said. I wasn't looking at him anymore, but I could tell he was smiling.
Do you understand now?
Kind of, I said. And then we ordered pancakes. 11. We spent the rest of our IHOP experience talking about nothing in particular. In fact, we changed gears so quickly from serious to superficial that I actually walked out the door wondering if I'd imagined the part where he told me I was beautiful. I think it was my fault. I kind of froze. I'd pushed him so hard to give me a straight answer, but the one I got wasn't the one I was expecting, and it threw me off balance. I didn't know what to do with it. It made me feel vulnerable. So we talked about movies, things we'd seen, things we hadn't. It was fine, but it was kind of boring. I think we were both relieved when we finally left IHOP behind, like we were trying to shake off something embarrassing. Do you know what time it is? I asked him. We'd been walking in silence, side by side, heading in no particular direction. He glanced at his watch and said, Third period is almost over. I sighed. I guess we should go back to school.
Yeah.
So much for ditching. He stopped walking and touched my arm. Said my name. I looked up. Ocean was quite a bit taller than me, and I'd never looked up at him like this before. I was standing in his shadow. We were on the sidewalk facing each other, and there wasn't much space between us. He smelled really nice. My heart was being weird again. But his eyes were worried. He opened his mouth to say something, and then very suddenly changed his mind. Looked away.
What is it?
I said. He shook his head, smiled at me out of the corner of his eye, but only briefly.
Nothing. Never mind.
I could tell that something was bothering him, but his reluctance to share made me think I probably didn't want to know what he was thinking. So I changed the subject.
Hey, how long have you lived here?
Unexpectedly, Ocean smiled.
He seemed both pleased and surprised to be asked the question.
Forever, he said, and then...